Hi, this is Paul. It is getting towards the end of April, and what that means in the Christian Reformed Church is that Synod is fast approaching. The documents are coming out on the Christian Reformed Church website. Delegates have been elected by the various classes and announced, and delegates are preparing for Synod, and in the early June, Synod will happen, and in all likelihood, it will be on YouTube again with a 30-minute delay as it has been for the last couple of years. Justin Carruthers, who I know a bit because he used to be in my classes, and he's sometimes there are deportations back to Canada. Justin Carruthers, I believe he now lives and works in Canada. This link will probably tell me. He's written a few things for on the CRC network. The Christian Reformed Church Network is sort of a distributed blog that different people can write on. And he wrote a couple of articles that got some attention on Voices and raised a question. He begins with the concept of crucial conversations. There are strong opposing opinions, high stakes, and or strong emotions. How they're typically framed in the Christian Reformed Church, you have affirming and traditional. I'll put the link to the article down below in it. And what this tends to lead to is a fight. And it goes to Synod. How we respond is important. It's not just what we profess we believe, but how we live that out, because how we respond reflects the heart of God, or at least it should, right? Thus, I can understand why all members of the Christian Reformed Church are joined together in one central idea. Failure is not an option. We must get this right. And Synod is sort of tasked with getting this right. Part of what has happened in this debate, and I think has been growing through years of debates, are questions as to whether or not Synod can actually handle something like this. The video I posted this morning was an article by John Baer, who guards the Guardians, and it was in Public Orthodoxy. And as I very much wanted to happen, I knew that adding some publicity to this article would get me a lot of response and clarification by a number of you who have joined the Orthodox Church. I don't know the political layout of the Orthodox Church. I don't even know what were the Orthodox churches, the Orthodox Church. I don't even quite know the vocabulary to use with respect to them. But it's given me a tremendous amount of feedback. I've really enjoyed the comments that people have left. I've really enjoyed the responses on Twitter. Basically, the heart of this sounded like a very Protestant approach to church, which almost leaves the you have the relationship between, well, what exactly is the church? Now, you can look at individual congregations, and those are fairly easy things to see, but what is the connecting tissue? And then the argument, who speaks for the church? How do churches get beyond a local face-to-face group? Now, by the time I release this, I will have released a conversation that I had with a member of the Christian Reformed Church in Rocky Mountain House, Alberta. And he had sent me an email and very much wanted to talk to me. He had found my YouTube channel, and I very much wanted to hear from him his thoughts. Now, nothing that he said surprised me. I had heard, I've spoken to many people who have very similar opinions that he does within the Christian Reformed Church, but it was a lovely conversation, and I thought he gave an excellent representation of what not an insignificant number of members in the Christian Reformed Church believe and how they approach these issues, and not only how they approach these issues conceptually, but for him, what going to a classis meeting is like, how he sees those who talk a lot at classis, and anyone who goes to classis Central California with me know that I probably speak as much as anyone in that classis meeting. I probably have as much influence as anyone in our classis. And so I thought it was absolutely important to get a representation of him and many who see the Christian Reformed Church in a similar way as he does out into the world and into the discussion and into the conversation. And it gets into this, and what I loved about his conversation is he actually touched on many of the important issues, what's happening at the local level in many churches, how the local church connects to other churches, when local churches and the Christian Reformed Church divide. It has long been the case in the Christian Reformed Church that once they would reach a certain size, they would usually divide. And so you'd have First Christian Reformed and Second Christian Reformed and Third Christian Reformed, usually breaking and dividing, usually between 400 and 500 or 600 people, because that size would get unruly. Traditionally in the Christian Reformed Church, there was usually a minister and then maybe a bulletin secretary. And over the past 30, 40 years, staff has multiplied. And there have been many things about doing church in North America that have changed. And so size means a great deal in terms of how churches organize themselves, how they, what they do in the church. And so changes are happening all over. Now, again, what was so remarkable about John Baer's piece was that there was a sort of an implicit priority of the local church. Now I pinned a comment to the video. The video is named, I'll put the link to it, John de Baer, Who Guards the Guardians? What does that mean? What do we mean by the church? Who speaks for her? And someone left just an outstanding comment, just sort of giving me a really good idea of how Orthodox churches, at least in North America, work, and give me some landscape about how to understand how they work together. Now, when you say things like how a church works, it's not tremendously easy to examine how a church works. Churches work at many different levels, and there's a tremendous amount of nuance in terms of how churches work. And so if you're curious about this comment, I pinned it. It's right up at the top. It was just an absolutely outstanding comment. But churches are wrestling with how they work. I had a really wonderful conversation today with Reformed Zoomer. It's in No Wait, No Ads. It'll be out next week. But, you know, he's working through this as a 21-year-old. Pretty remarkable what he's done already. He's only 21 years old. But he's working through this in terms of the mainline church. And so you wrestle with the question, well, what is the church? What do we mean by that word? And I know T. Grog sort of mocks it. 2,000 years and you still don't know what a church is. It's like, yeah, well, that's true. It's often a little mysterious, but it's not that we don't know nothing. So Justin begins talking about these crucial conversations, and he talks about worldview, movement towards micro-conversations on worldview over macro arguments on moral issues. And he basically makes the point in this first article that synod doesn't change hearts and minds. And the synod is a place where you shouldn't expect to see hearts and minds changed by the way we work together. And this was, he practically says, what Jordan Peterson and Ben Shapiro said in their conversation on Jordan's channel, where Ben Shapiro basically concedes that they do all this political red meat on Daily Wire, but the truth is, if you really want to get involved and change hearts and minds, you got to go down to the campfire level. You have to have small, intimate, personal conversations. Justin writes this, but let me ask you, where do we spend the majority of our time? Isn't it obvious we spend almost all of our time talking about the bottom three? Now, different worldviews lead to blank, different authorities which result in blank, different assumptions that lead to blank, different answers to questions on blank, different moral issues that blank, different people embrace blank. Arguing about different answers to questions on different moral issues that different people embrace. This is one of the most compelling reasons why the more we talk about this, the further divided we become. We just sort of continue to focus on that level. I mean to convince you, if you're not convinced already, that these types of difficult, crucial conversations need to be had more frequently on the micro scale, coffee shops, homes, offices, talking about your worldviews while humanizing the person with whom we agree, far more than on the macro scale. Now, part of what made my conversation with this Canadian truck driver so powerful was that his main points were clear. But along the way, he dropped these breadcrumbs that showed, oh, are all the kids in church? No. What about the person in my extended family who's gay and the rifts that have created? So you could see that unlike this stereotype that says, oh, everybody that holds a certain position has never had experience with X. No, not necessarily, sometimes. But people still are formed and have opinions, and these things matter. If you're not convinced already that these types of difficult, crucial conversations need to be had more frequently on a micro scale, coffee shops, homes, offices, talking about worldviews while humanizing the person with whom we disagree, far more than on the macro scale behind microphones or social media pontificating to the world, talking about moral issues, we need to spend far more time and energy talking about our worldviews, which leads to different authorities, which results in different assumptions, which then and only then lead to different answers to questions about moral issues we face. I agree that the scaling has to be brought down. I think in some ways there's an implicit assumption that if we do this, then what? We'll all agree? I'm skeptical. Our conversations won't be so heated. I'm skeptical. Why? Because the heat comes from caring, not indifference. And that's what makes what's going on in the Christian Reformed Church so palpable and so painful. And this is where sort of this intersects with John Baer's, well, who speaks for the church? How does the church speak? What exactly is the church? Is it the local level? And of course, the Protestants have been working on this. I made a comment a while ago that in many ways, Protestantism is sort of the experimental wing of the church. All kinds of things are experimented with in Protestantism. And we get to sort of sit back and watch all of these experiments happen. And we can learn from them. And this is, and so what was quite remarkable, again, in my conversation with this Canadian truck driver was that, you know, he held no ill will. He, like all of us, is trying to piece this together. He had his strong convictions about how things should be. He had a group of like-minded people around him. They were working their church. He had realized was living in cultures and things he didn't control. He had a faith in God. All of those things were operable in him and in the conversation. They could be clearly seen. But what's interesting, and what part of the reason why I wanted this on the channel is, I know a lot of people in the Christian Reformed Church are going to watch him and say, well, he's exactly the problem. And I would say, no, he's exactly the church. Now, some might say, well, what about the other side? What about people who have same-sex orientation or identify as LGBTQ or on and on and on? Well, they've got plenty of representation in this debate within the Christian Reformed Church on YouTube, and I can point you to the channels. And I've extended invitations to a variety of people to come on the channel, and nobody's bit so far, which is fine. They don't all need to be on my channel or have a conversation with me or share their story. What many people have noticed is that there's been no lack of sharing stories in the Christian Reformed Church. All of those things that happen at the coffee shop, just because they happen at the coffee shop doesn't mean everyone comes to agreement. And still the basic questions of how the church should operate continue to hold. And then the questions about synod, how should synod operate, continues to hold. So there's a part one and a part two to this piece. And again, I'll put the links below. And in the beginning of the second one, he summarizes a bunch of it. And my goal in writing the article is not to address what we believe on the topic of human sexuality or even why. and you can find what he thinks if you're really curious about that. My goal is to propose two ideas that would help us in how to move forward to be more robust and profitable, crucial conversations for the health and vibrancy of the church we love. A movement towards micro conversations of worldview over macro arguments on moral issues. When macro arguments is the only option, applying best practices to achieve more robust ecclesiology. Okay. And he says, greater understanding of the mandate of synod. Well, I'd agree with that. Now he goes into a discussion of white blood cells and red blood cells. And see, early on with this debate, I said, this is also a crisis of Protestantism. Now, I know some of you will note that I talk about Orthodoxy here, and sometimes we talk about Catholicism here. And I try and do that in a way that tries to inhibit, boy, my camera just can't seem to focus very consistently. I try to do that in a way that doesn't sort of initiate the trigger on YouTube of intertribal warfare. Because it's very easy to trigger. You just read the comment section, it gets triggered no matter how much I try to do it. But there's a crisis in Protestantism. And if I'm looking at Orthodoxy and asking questions, like looking at the John Baer piece, or looking at Protestantism and asking questions, there's a crisis in Protestantism because, and this goes all the way back to the Reformation, because the way it was supposed to work was, you know, Luther would show the text, and then if we read the text for ourselves, we would all read the text and agree, and that would be the end of it. And that most decidedly is not the end of it. And so the way this is rolled out in the Christian Reformed Church has been that synodical committees describe biblical interpretations, and that's supposed to fix it. Now, this sort of came to a head in the Women in Church Office fight when Synod basically said, well, here's two biblical approaches to this, and we think they're both legitimate, so we won't have a disagreement over whether or not women should have be in place in church office. And, well, about 60,000 people left the Christian Reformed Church because of that. And many others stayed, and the church has sort of lived with that uneasy compromise since then. But then when it came to this issue, I've mentioned in many other videos how the church has changed for a variety of reasons between the Women in Church Office fight and the human sexuality fight, and that the church is not the same. And then, of course, in Synod 2022 and 2023, votes were cast, and basically moderate sided with conservatives, and the votes were consistently about 70-30 in favor of the Christian Reformed Church maintaining a traditional position on sexuality. And that left those who wanted at least a local option, if not something more affirming, sort of out in the cold, and also the fact that, well, it doesn't look like the Christian Reformed Church is going to tolerate people, at least in practice, breaking covenant on these rules in the church. But what that meant was, we're not really arguing about biblical interpretation. There's a sense of, you can argue about biblical interpretation all you want, but we're going to count the votes of people who are convinced by different camps of biblical interpretation. Pervasive interpretive pluralism, as Christian Smith wrote in his book, The Bible Made Impossible. And so votes are cast at synod, and the church decides, and the church creates boundaries and decides, well, what should we do? Now, we sort of has networking and defensive, and I wasn't really, didn't feel that illustration was terribly compelling. But his main thing is turn off the camera, enter into executive session anytime we enter into crucial conversation. And his argument for that is, many may hate this idea. In an age of authenticity and transparency, this might feel like an argument against such values. But what I am proposing is not that. It is more consistent with the applied principles we find in Scripture. Now, what's interesting about this is a way of going about things. Now, this launched a discussion on CRC Voices, and I wrote a piece this morning. I agree that deliberation is difficult in plenary session. What's important to understand about the Synod of the Christian Reformed Church is that only half of synod is seen. And what is seen are the plenary sessions. Those are what gets recorded on YouTube. What the part of synod that is not seen, which is arguably the most powerful part of synod, are the advisory committees. Everyone who goes to synod is assigned to an advisory committee, and they're usually between 20 and 30 people on that advisory committee with some advisors. And what they do is that everything that is thrown at synod goes into those advisory committees, and those advisory committees bring recommendations to the floor of synod about how synod should respond to everything that's been thrown at synod. Everything that's thrown at synod from denominational agencies, from communications from churches, from individuals, appeals, all of that is sent to the advisory committees. They do the pre-work, and that's where there are deliberations. And those are dark. There are no cameras in those rooms. There are no recordings of those rooms. And for all practical purposes, those rooms are done in executive session. Now, other delegates of synod may visit advisory committees if they don't have work of their own to do, and many have a lot of work to do. But visitors may not come, generally speaking, and visit those rooms. That is for the work of synod. And 90% of the time, the recommendations of the advisory committees are what carry the day. Now, part of that is true because the advisory committees are sort of a sample of the entire synod. And so on a small scale, you sort of work through what goes on the big scale. So that then asks the question, what are the roles of the plenary sessions? In many ways, the business of synod is done in the dark. The advisory committees are where most of the real work of synod is done. These meetings are not recorded. They are, in fact, under a semblance of executive session. They are done in the dark. Synod speeches are mostly self-expression. People step up to the mic to tell their stories, express their displeasure often. It's sort of like the internet or YouTube. If it's emotive, it gets attention. Now, there is some deliberation that goes on the floor of synod, but it's less common than presentation. And then the question is, well, what is the plenary session for? I have to meet with a guy who wants to take down a tree, so I will be back. Now, the question about the plenary session is an important one because it doesn't seem to me it's that obvious what it is for. In some ways, it's a check on the advisory committees. If the advisory committees, like I said, about 90% of the time, most of what the advisory committees put out, the plenary session will endorse and put it through. Over the last 20 years, as I've been watching Synod, I've noticed that I pay careful attention when an advisory committee majority, first of all, when there's a majority and minority report coming out of an advisory committee, you know that there's some division. And then you look at the numbers on the majority and on the minority. And then when, let's say, a majority report goes down and either a minority report gets taken up or it's sent back to committee, you know that, okay, well, maybe the mapping and the sampling of synod that went into that advisory committee didn't quite match the body and more work needs to be done. But a lot of what the plenary session is about is sort of presentation to the church and helping the body see itself. As many of my videos have noted, one of the real breakdowns that have happened in the Christian Reformed Church is that the body has been unable to see itself. And again, I've done many videos that talk about the end of the Calvin College circulatory system after the Second World War and before the Second World War that sort of kept the church as one body understanding itself between the urban and the rural settings. The urban diaspora that went out, especially after the Second World War, and the demise of many of those cities with the rise of, I know urban monoculture isn't the best term, but it's the only term I've got right now. And until I get a better one, sort of the collective culture that cities have that are in some ways antithetical to the collective culture that that rural America has. And of course, a lot of that debate is playing out on on political stages around the country. I'll continue reading my piece. The chair has a great deal of responsibility for trying to make Synod work. Last year, Paul DeVries, a veteran of this, if we have one. Now, Paul has, at this point, about as much experience in the denomination as anyone. He's chaired important boards of important institutions. His father was a missionary in the Philippines. He was the pastor of the church I'm in right now. Paul DeVries grew up in the church that I'm in right now here in Sacramento. I first met Paul when we were at Calvin College. He was a year ahead of me. He married a girl from Whitensville, the town that I know quite well, where my mother lives. And so Paul is in many ways sort of the archetypal moderate leader in the CRC right now. And so it came as no surprise when he was elected to chair that synod. He had chaired synods before and he had done so well. But it's an extremely tricky thing to try to chair synod. And so at the beginning of Synod 2023, Paul said, I'm going to allow stories. Now, there's sort of we don't talk about this much because not a lot of people have to chair synod, but there's in any of these meetings, you can face it in a classis meeting, there's always a trade-off relationship between getting the business of the meeting done and sort of helping the body do its work, its fellowship work, and its knitting together work of the people in the body. And I think Paul, at the beginning of 2023, looked at the mood of the church and said, the church needs in the plenary sessions to hear each other. And so he encouraged people to tell stories and he tried to have the balance between it. And of course, there was the question of whether or not votes should be read. And there are a lot of controversial elements in Synod 2023. Now, I know some of you listening to this will say, why on earth are we listening to all this insider baseball in the Christian Reformed Church? And that's a good question. Probably many people asking that question did not click on this video. On the other hand, what's been quite incredible over the last number of years since I've had this YouTube channel, especially the last few years when I started talking about the issues in the Christian Reformed Church, many of you not in the Christian Reformed Church have said how much these topics interest you because there are analogies in your denomination, at least the culture, the same culture is running through both of them. So Paul DeVries really tried to balance that, and I think he understood that a big part of the role of the plenary session at Synod is to help the church hear itself and understand itself. And so he gave a great deal of latitude towards storytelling. Now, again, as I said, there's a trade-off relationship between storytelling, which helps the church sort of see itself and hear itself, and getting business done, and Synod 2023 quite famously ended disastrously. And there are a number of moments in that synod that I think will live on in the memories of many people who are close synod watchers, including myself. And it's actually important, I think, that we have videotape of that. At some point in this, I'm going to play about 6 minutes from that synod, which I think were a moment that the church sort of looks at. Now, here's a question, and it's a vital question because now we're in uncharted territory, and now we not only have video recordings of Synod, which probably hardly anybody goes back and looks at anymore, except for maybe some nerd like myself. It is, in fact, a video record, which is tremendously useful to someone like myself who does not have the opportunity to be in Grand Rapids. And it then gives us something of a representation of a moment which is much larger than that representation. I, of course, grew up in days before there was all you had out of synod were the acts of synod and then oral tradition, where you could find people who were at that synod and they could tell you the story. And, of course, there's a very interesting relationship between a story that's remembered and told, and a videotape. And I think as we continue to explore cognitive science and understanding what goes into this mysterious being that is human experience, it's you recognize that videotapes accurately capture some things, but also their accuracy distorts other things because it can't really sort of bring in everything around it. Yet if we didn't have the videotape, Rita's speech and the response would be in memory, and that memory would shift. And so I'm really glad, for a long time, even before YouTube, Synod was taking audio recordings, which I think was wise, but they weren't made public. Now it's public. So Paul DeVries, a veteran, he tried not to edit too much. Now this is a question. In many ways, what the chair of Synod has to do is edit the meeting as it goes. And the executive committee is under a lot of pressure to get everything done. And a lot of what comes to the Senate floor is presentation. And it's presentation to the delegates, because delegates, of course, go back and connect on with the church. But it's also presentation now to the broader church via YouTube. A great example of this are examinations. For example, in Synod 2022, if you go back on YouTube to that, you will find yours truly interviewing the executive director, no, I'm sorry, the general secretary of the denomination, Zachary King, for his position. I was on the advisory committee that was responsible for that, and then I was tasked by that advisory committee to basically run the examination, but it wasn't really an examination. It was a get-to-know-you thing, where questions were asked, and there had already been a long search process that had culminated in a single candidate. Now, this has been part of the evolution of Synod in years past. There might be sort of two candidates that come and Synod has to choose. The church was a very different thing then, and the world was a very different place then. This is sort of analogous to what happens in many congregations, especially large congregations these days, when there's a search committee that delivers one candidate and the candidate goes to the congregation. Very seldom do you find a church council, not a search team, a church council bring two candidates to a congregation and they vote between them. Now, this church did that here 27 years ago and I won the vote. That doesn't happen very much anymore. That is a debate that you can have, whether that should be had. But a lot of it has to do with some of what Justin Carruthers is pointing to in these pieces about what kinds of settings can accomplish what kinds of tasks. In my conversation with Redeemed Zoomer today, I started poking at that a little bit with him because we're very much in the question of institutions. And most of our institutions are formed by assumptions and traditions and practices of modernity. As modernity sort of withers and changes and recedes, there are going to need to be new practices and liturgies and new institutions that arise to function in the way that the old ones are no longer able to function. And we see all around us the decay of various institutions. And so this is all part of this transition. And so this discussion about, well, should the Christian Reformed Synod continue to stream its proceedings via YouTube before it was using another live streaming app? Is that important? So I think the question of advisory committee and plenary sessions, they're important. And I think they're still working well. The plenary session, I think, is for spectacle. Maybe that's not the right word. But it is for the church to try to see itself. Now, of course, the number of people who watch Synod is quite small. But the number of people who watch Synod, I mean, even when you get sort of peak viewing with contentious subjects in the last few years, you might have 2,000, up to 2,000 people watching. And those of us who are familiar with YouTube will say, well, that's a decent size audience, but it's not a massive audience. It's not a mass media audience. But those recordings are important because, of course, the most motivated 2,000 people will watch, And they can point to other things too. But that what that means is that at least there's the opportunity for the church to see itself and to know itself better. And I think that's really important. I think it's extremely important. One of my real concerns over the last 20 years with respect to the Christian Reformed Church is how the church can process confessional conversations together. And in many ways, these confessional conversations, I think, are related to these crucial conversations. They are crucial, but I hope to do a video on confessionality because I think that's really where this is lying. Because you had, of course, councils and creeds very early in the development of the church. The confessions that the Christian Reformed Church is dealing with are these reformational documents, and there have been new documents ever since then, the Belhar Confession, the Our World Belongs to God. And then we have to sort of figure out, okay, not only do how do sort of advisory committees, which are behind closed doors, and plenary sessions work, but also how do these documents work? Partly being that these documents are written documents. And how do written documents work in an age where video is available and in some ways preferred? I could have written an article about this and, let's say, posted it on the CRC network or in the banner. It may very well be that more people engage with this video than would have in the banner. Maybe, maybe not. It's hard to tell. But the engagement with the banner would be different. And it's many of those kinds of issues that we are wrestling with now that we are sort of moving towards. So I mentioned with to Reform Zoomer, I said, you know, because he's talking about these institutions, and it's like, well, you've established the Recaptiva movement as a college kid on a laptop. And how many people from these other denominations are participating in this? When, for example, Dan Ackerman, who went to seminary with me, and Tim Vink, who I worked with on some projects here in the Central Valley of California, when they established the Alliance of Reformed Churches, which was a breakoff from the Reformed Church, they did it, I'm pretty sure, with cell phones and laptops, not with a denominational building. And the Christian Reformed Church is selling its denominational building. All of these issues are germane to what's going on in the world now. Now, in terms of the plenary session, the role of the chair is key in helping the body deliberate to the degree that deliberation is appropriate and what happens there. Some deliberation happens on the floor of Synod, but you can tell with a body of almost 200 people, it's really difficult. And most of those people aren't really too sure with procedure. You see that again and again and again. And that's why, again, it's often better that a lot of this stuff does happen in advisory committees. But I think it's absolutely vital that it comes to the light of day. Because if it doesn't come to the light of day, then you tend to get conspiracy theories, rumors, fake news, all sorts of things happen very quickly. They can happen in a small church. They can surely happen in a denomination. Much of Synod presentation to the presentation to the body, much of Synod is presentation to the plenary and through them to the broader elements of the church paying attention. Look at the exams of seminary profs and denominational functionaries. They aren't really exams. The votes aren't really votes. This is theater, and I don't mean it in a bad way. Now, the Koreans know this because, of course, Koreans are famous for cutting all the deals in the backstage and then making a presentation up front. And they don't want any surprises in the presentation up front. Now, American culture is a little bit different with respect to that. That tends to feel a little inauthentic. But it was interesting last year when there was the question, COVID was still lingering, but there are also demonstrations outside of Synod in 2022. And there was the concern that people would come into the gallery, especially in the chapel where they had Synod in 2023. In the Fine Arts Center, there's there's separation between the body of Synod and the gallery where people are watching. In the Calvin Seminary Chapel, it's very much wrap around. There was concern that there would be pressure by activists protesting that would intimidate people on the floor of synod. And so if you're going to close the meeting, you're going to have to kick out the gallery too. And actually, I think in terms of the functioning of the church, the gallery is really essential. Because if you go into executive session, then your reporters go out too. And then suddenly, many of your delegates that on one hand, because it's an executive session, you really shouldn't talk about it. And on the other hand, there might be things that for the health of the church should be known, which is why if you're chairing a meeting like this, you're really loath to go into executive session unless you really need to. And usually that's because you need to discuss a person. And persons are handled gently. Ideas should be managed in plenary session. When the church was mostly a regional church or a small network of Dutch churches and synod was 2 weeks, well, the dynamics were different. Now we live in the age of YouTube and the internet. The plenary sessions are theater and spectacle, not unlike the U.S. House of Representatives. Now I'm going to play the video, and it's a moving video of what happened in Synod 2023. And that section of video still haunts me. Now, again, in terms of memory, it's still out there. But it addresses what Justin notes. And he talks about the fact that the advisory committee wrestling with the contentious matters, and many of the people who were on those advisory committees talk to me about the spirit in the room of the advisory committee. If you go back and watch the plenary sessions, you'll hear this referred to many times. We were together in prayer. They were doing that. But in some cases, they still came out with majority and minority report. So on one hand, in the face-to-face relationships, they could reinforce these bonds, and that was a good thing to do. But yet at some point, the church figures out what it wants to and what it has to say. And actually the process for doing that now, and for Synod 2024, as I said in a previous video, I don't know, even though the gravamen question is important, I don't know how much the answers that Synod will give will matter unless they do a really good job. Otherwise, churches are going to continue to sort of work as they work in their contexts. Yet the real question is going to be, what will Synod do with Classis Grand Rapids East? That's the real question. I should pause here so that I can insert the video.
Then Herb, and then Matt from Lake Erie.
Rita Klein-Gelting, Classis Quinti. I have a question for the majority committee, and I think I know the answer. Actually, 4 questions, but I know the answer, but because otherwise I wouldn't have signed the minority report. If this passes, can someone who is unsure of what God expects of LGBTQ peoples, can that unsure person become a member of the CRC? Question 2, can someone who is unsure become an office bearer in the Christian Reformed Church, in our churches? Number 3, can someone who is unsure sign a gravamen? Is that okay? I've been a member of the Christian Reformed Church all my life, as my husband and our parents and my 4 sons, my 4 boys, who are, Karen knows, they're men, and their wives are all following Jesus and are members of the Christian Reformed Church. My 12 grandchildren are members of the Christian Reformed Church. If my 4 sons and their wives fall into this category of unsure, can the CRC still be their home? You may answer the question.
No, I know. No, Rita, that's fine. We were in committee together. I bless you. We worked together. I'll try and answer as best I can. Maybe not so much in the technical manner of things.
Come to order, folks. Give some space here. Give some space.
At 5:30 this evening, we adjourned. I think it was 5:35. And I jumped in my vehicle and I drove to a sports bar down the street, had ice water with lemon. And here I am, a 55-year-old guy sitting in the corner in a sweater, crying. I love this church. I've been a member all my life. I love preaching for this church. I love teaching in this church. I love its confessions. I wouldn't be standing here tonight if I didn't love these confessions. But would griefs be so bad? Is that we make decisions here, and that we leave here, and some decide to be ogres about it, jerks about it, and we can't even hold to a confession. And we gotta be jerks about it. Please, So Rita, I hear your heart. Yes, Willem, it is a yes and no question. No. Let me try and put it this way. And if I'm out of order, say so. If you're going to vote for this majority report, please don't leave here and be a jerk about it. And to those who are opposed to this report, not all of us hate LGBT people. Okay? I'm sorry. So, yes, I want to believe, Rita, those who have questions, who are unsure, have a place, and we're not jerks about it, and we can find a way to converse. But please understand, I love these confessions, and we could do this. We could hold the truth and bring people along in the truth, and they can see Christ in us. I don't know. I realize that probably doesn't specifically answer your question. I'm just speaking to the heart of what we're trying to talk about here. So I apologize.
We have Matthew, and we have John.
Those 6 minutes of video are so powerful. And so what happens is you take the intimacy of the advisory committee, and now you bring it out to the floor. If the advisory committee were able to sort of wrap this up and put a bow on it, and that's what often happens. Advisory committees are often emotional, but they're also intimate. and people work closely together and they negotiate. And then what they really have to do is sort of take that spirit, especially when they, so on my advisory committee in Synod 2022, we dealt with the structure and binationality issue. And that, if it hadn't been for the Human Sexuality Report, that would have been the contentious issue at that synod. And we went into that advisory committee with a really challenging, a lot of people didn't think we were going to be able to come out of that committee with a unified report. We did. We worked hard and we came together. And so when we got to the floor of Synod, our entire committee, Americans and Canadians, could come to the floor and say, we worked this out. But then you have to convince the rest of the floor that this compromise brokered in secret is needed for the fuller body. And that's really important, because then if the church beyond Synod is going to accept what Synod does, they need to see that emotion, that intensity. They need to see that these decisions are not made lightly, that they are not made in secret, that there's not a conspiracy. And to me, those 6 minutes nailed the current misery of the Christian Reformed Church. They're right there. And what Rita did, what Zwart did, they both showed this is something we care about. We're not taking you, the person on the other side of the aisle, lightly. We really want to be a family. How can we do this? And I think without that testimony that they offer to us through the presentation, through the pathos, I think overall the odds of the church being able to manage what we have to manage are even worse. And so I think actually the advisory committees where Synod is dark, the plenary session where Synod is open and public, I think that's a really important functionality for the entire process of the church to work. So, yeah, very much a CRC video. Let me know what you think in the comments.